This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So the worst of it should be moving through in about maybe 30 minutes, something like that, or be finished moving through in about 30 to 40 minutes. Hopefully we talk to the Joe Valiente and Colin Arnold with Jefferson Parish and Orleans Parish, respectively. Again, neutral ground parking okay until 6 o'clock. We talked with Robbie Livingston, the president of Tangipahoa Parish. And he said it's hell on wheels, and I'm paraphrasing here, for about an hour and a half, and then it clears up pretty much. I wanted to correct this because earlier I misquoted Garth Brooks. I said the thunder roars. Somebody texted and said the thunder rolls and lightning strikes, and I always get the lyrics wrong. So anyway, let's talk about Wednesday, being Liberation Day. That's what President Trump says about tariffs. And if you know everything there is about tariffs, I think you might be kidding yourself, because I don't know that anybody does really, or all of the consequences, both intended and unintended. So we're going to talk with our friend Stephen Melnick, professor of supply chain management at Michigan State. He's done research in a strategic supply chain, cybersecurity performance measurements, and supply chain design. Good morning, professor. How are you?
Good morning. Not bad. How about yourself?
Yeah, it's raining here, but it does that every now and then. The weather, the thunder and the lightning, all that stuff. But we'll get through it. How's the weather where you are?
We had fun yesterday. We, from 6 to 8 o'clock, we had a severe thunderstorm warning. We had tornadoes basically not far from us. It was interesting. We had winds up to, in some areas, up to over 80 miles per hour.
Whew. That's hurricane almost.
Yeah, it is. So we had a lot of fun.
Let's talk about tariffs. And I want to open the phone lines here, as always, the Oakland Ranch Jeweler Talking text line. I said Robbie Livingston, and I got my parishes confused. Let me clean this up, Professor, and then I'll move on.
Sure.
Robbie Miller in Tangipahoa Parish, not Robbie Livingston. Livingston is the adjoining parish, and I'm moving so fast here, that's why I conflated the two. Let's talk about tariffs. How fast are they moving, and how much confusion is there with this? Because I honestly, and you and I have spoken about this before, I don't know how you can keep track of what the tariff's on, what it is. And I saw a couple of news pieces over the weekend about auto dealers saying, I don't know. That's all they could say. Do you have any idea? First of all, let's take a look at the snapshot as we stand now of tariffs. What has been imposed? What hasn't been imposed? Are we still negotiating? Has anything happened? Talk to me.
Okay. let's start by really asking a simple question. What is going on? And to do this, I think we have to look at the latest bit of information we got from the White House. Let's understand one thing. You hit on something important. The tariff window seems, whatever is being said about tariffs, seems to change, and that's causing a lot of uncertainty. But here is what's going on. The key elements of the proposal that they have in place, as we currently know about it for Liberation Day, which is April 2nd, is that what we're going to do is we're going to change the tariff requirements previously present. And I'm going to cover the auto industry because that's where I know most of it. Okay. Basically, what they're going to do is they're going to talk about, they're doing the following. There previously, as of in with the United States, Mexico, Canada Auto Act, what you had to have is it allowed the free travel of product, goods, and services between Canada, United States, and Mexico up to 75% if they were produced in one of those three countries. As the White House has now indicated, it's going to change. And so what's going to happen is that tariff is going to apply to imported vehicles, light trucks, and key auto components, such as engines, transmissions, powertrains, electric components. However, there's going to be exemption for those companies which are part of the U.S. Mexico-Canada Auto Act under the they can avoid tariffs if they're able to certify the U.S. components. And what the government, what the White House is demanding is instead of 75% coming from Canada, United States, and Mexico, it's 75% coming from the United States, which is an enormous change.
Yeah, that's it a basically big thing. Is, that's a big yeah, switch.
What it's done is it's taken over 60 years of negotiated work between Canada, United States, and Mexico, beginning back in the Lyndon Baines Johnson era, where we've seen companies build their investment strategy around the increasing flow of goods and services between Canada, United States, and Mexico. And what you're saying is, time out, it's going to change. And the White House note is very clear. It says possible expansions will be noted. The justification, our national security, the lessons from the pandemic, and they're claiming that previous negotiations such as NAFTA, the auto pact that used to exist between Canada and the United States under Lyndon Baines Johnson, and the United States-Mexico-Canada Act are ineffective. And there's some interesting justifications, but you've really thrown everything up because for some car companies like GM, GM imports about 46% of their cars. They're going to get hit. Companies like Toyota, companies like Honda, Nissan are going to get hit. Some companies like Porsche, I have difficulty since they're going to get with this 25% tariff. I have difficulty seeing them continue to compete in the United States because you know how much a Porsche car costs. Mm-hmm. You're going to add a 25% surcharge. That's going to be expensive.
Is this just with Canada and Mexico, or where do vehicles like that are made in Germany fit in all of this?
Okay, it's really an interesting question. For example, BMW. BMW, its sedans are primarily made in Germany. However, if you look at most of the SUVs, they're assembled in South Carolina. However, a significant proportion of their components are coming from overseas. So what's going to happen is if you're assembled in the United States and you're using American parts in your BMW, and we're talking about the X5, the X3, you're okay. However, if you bring in parts from Germany, which they're going to do, those are going to be taxed at 25%. So you've got to factor that in. You've got other examples. For example, the Q5, which is fairly well-regarded by many people from Audi. It's assembled in Mexico, which means when it comes across the border, even though it's got components, it's going to be tariffed. You've got the RAV4. The RAV4 right now in the United States is one of the most popular cars. Some of it's done in Kentucky, but the majority of RAV4 assembly for most of the cars that Americans buy, they're assembled in Cambridge and Woodstock, Ontario, and I've been past there numerous times, which means you've got a car which has about a last thing I've seen in terms of its percentage, it's got about 75% American parts. It's going to come across because it's coming across from Canada to the United States. It'll get tariffed. So you've got situations going on where American companies are sitting and saying, how are we going to deal with this? If the tariffs are short-term, less than 2 months, I think you'll see them absorbing it. If it's more than 2 months, it's going to affect the car prices. And that's become a major issue of debate. And the other thing, there's something really interesting that people haven't picked up on. The way the international trade partners are responding.
Tell me about it.
Okay. In the past, when international trade partners, when we've done this, they've come to the table and said, okay, what can we do? And that's because in most cases, what we are, the United States, is the largest market. So what you're doing is saying, if you want to get access to the United States, you've got to do it. Canada has taken a position of reorientating itself with Europe, which is interesting. And, you know, think of it, Canada and the United States. The United States is Canada's biggest market.
Mm-hmm.
Canada is one of the United States' biggest market. And here you've got Mark Carney, who is the new Liberal leader, and he's the new Prime Minister of Canada, who's saying, you know, maybe we have to rethink our economic future. You've got an interesting tendency. Japan, for example, did you realize that Japan, you're going to say, how's this going to relate to tariffs? Just remember, I'm an academic. A straight line is a curve. Japan is the world's largest holder of American debt.
Wait, say that again?
Japan is the world's largest holder of American debt. Now, why is that so important? It's important because there's indications that countries in the world are starting to reexamine American debt. And they're saying maybe it's not as good, as solid as we think it is. And so what's going on is people are looking, you've got China reorientating itself. You've got Canada reorientating itself. You've got Europe saying maybe we should deal with more instead of worrying about the states. And so in contrast to Trump's first term, where countries came across and said, let's negotiate, you've got people looking at each other and saying, maybe we want to avoid the United States. Maybe we want to downgrade our dependence on the United States. So right from that portion, you've got an interesting concern about the fact that we have a great deal of debt. The way that we spend $1 billion a day on servicing it and introducing this tariff at the time it does is causing uncertainty, which may impact our ability to pay or service our debt. So you've got not only the impact on the auto industry, but you've got the global impact.
All right, let me take a break, Professor. We're going to pick it up here when we come back. And let me tell you a concern of mine. And my sure. concern here is that I don't want the United States to write a check with our mouths that our economy can't cash, to paraphrase an expression that I can't use on the air. And what I mean by that is when you talk about countries realigning themselves, my concern is that, and we may have had this conversation before, there's a game in golf when you bet it's called wolfing and you can decide to.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. but that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
To squirt everybody and go it alone and wolf beat alone, yep. Wolf do it yourself. And I'm concerned that the United States winds up being the odd person out. They wind up going it alone, where maybe we think we're more central to the world than we are. And before we know it, Canada and everybody else has aligned themselves with the Chinese, Japanese, etc. And we're left looking in the window. We'll talk. We come back 9:22. Back in a flash. WWL. 9:28, Tommy Tucker, WWL, trying to understand tariffs and the ramifications with our guest, who is a professor of supply chain management, Dr. Stephen Melnick, who is there to help us always when we have these many questions as we do. So I proposed a question, Professor, before about the United States being the odd man out on this, or the odd person out on this, when it comes to economies, when it comes to Australia and China, for example. Australia, I know I read somewhere saying they don't really have a beef with China. United States put them in a bad spot here with tariffs. Military superpowers, Russia, China, et cetera. I don't know. How does all this play out geopolitically? And could the – I just want to make sure the United States is not, again, overloading itself where we wind up with other – countries aligning with other countries, and all of a sudden they're like, okay, good, do your own thing, and we can't.
Well, you've really asked in that little introduction, you've asked a whole bunch of different questions.
Jump in where you feel comfortable, Professor. You know me.
Well, I'll let me give you the buckets. You pick them.
Okay.
The first bucket is really getting back to the question of tariffs and the United States, because a lot of the discussion on tariffs in the United States is focused on the auto industry, and you've got Sean Feeney, you've got the president of UAW, who's in favor of it, but yet a lot of the big companies are. Then you've got the actions of Canada. You've got the actions where Canada just, when Mark Carney takes over from Justin Trudeau as the Prime Minister of Canada, traditionally the Prime Minister of Canada, the first act he's done upon taking over the leadership of Canada, is he will arrange a meeting with the President of the United States. It recognizes that traditional closeness. Mark Carney this time around goes to France and Great Britain, not the United States. Mm-hmm. China, for example, is playing a wait-and-see game, but then China's in a great position. And, in fact, there's strong indications that because of what's happening in tariffs and what's happening with the American debt, China's now repositioning itself and moving away from the dollar. So you've got Canada, you've got international trade, and then you've got the whole effect of tariffs. And the last bucket, I'm going to build on something you asked me in the last interview we had. Mm-hmm. And you said, Trump talks about the McKinley period as the golden age. Mm-hmm. It's referred to as the gilded period. And I pointed out that, number one, even McKinley towards the end of his life was changing. And the United States learned a really interesting lesson about the nasty effects of tariffs in 1930. So, what do you want to talk about? The auto industry, global, Canada, or history?
All of the above. I'm here to learn, man. I'm telling you. I'm just trying to figure out, again, the overall overarching issue is, I'm concerned that, going back to my golf analogy, that the United States winds up getting squirted and we're all on our own, and all of a sudden we can't.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, let me go through. I'm going to talk about the historic, then I'm going to talk about auto, then I'm going to talk about the debt.
Okay.
Historically, one of the things Trump never talks about in terms of why the United States has become such a significant proponent until recently of free trade is because in 1930, under Hubert Humphrey, the Republicans introduced the Smoot-Hawley Act, Tariff Act, which essentially raised tariffs on goods coming to the United States by 40%, with tariffs going as high as 59%. The result of that was just a disaster. It created a trade war, and the economists basically learned after studying it that action took the Depression and made it from the Depression into the Great Depression. Mm. It just ruined it. So Trump can talk about McKinley. I'll talk about Smoot-Hawley and say, what we learned from that period is Trump's tariffs are not the way to go. Then the question is asked, well, why is the auto industry so concerned? Well, it's because over 60 years, we built a very complex supply chain. Just to give you an idea, here's a question for you. How many parts do you think a typical car has?
Cool. And that was the other – I had that question on the list already, Professor, because – it would go to an infinite number. As you were outlining which components were subject to tariffs and which weren't, that was my exact thought. It's like, Lord only knows, between circuitry and seat belts and everything involved, I don't know.
Okay, here's the latest statistics are, it consists of 20,000 parts, typical cart, and it comes from a supply chain that consists of 18,000 suppliers located across the world, with the majority being in Canada, the United States, and Mexico.
Okay.
Wow. So what's the interesting thing? Well, right now we've got this new introduction, and we've got a firm date of April the 2nd. The first problem we have is that you've got plants which are located in Canada, the United States, in Mexico, for example. Honda just built a plant in Mexico in order to assemble certain cars. And now what you've got to do is you've got to reorientate that. That's not easy. The analogy I'll give you is, some years ago I did a job for the United States Naval Academy. It was kind of interesting. They were refurbishing Farragut Hall, is where they, King Hall is where they feed all of the middies. And they wanted to minimize the disruption when they moved it from King Hall to Farragut Hall. And I was called in to do that, and I did it. It was kind of fun, too. But in the process, I had a chance to talk with the commandant of the Naval Academy, who is known as a Ralph, Rear Admiral Lowerhafen. We were talking about aircraft carriers for some reason. God knows. Here's a question. When an aircraft carrier is introduced into the Navy, they take it out for a shakedown cruise, and they get up to speed. Mm-hmm. Then they do what's known as angles and dangles. So you're cruising around, let's say, at 18, 20 knots per hour, and what you're trying to do is you're trying to get the aircraft carrier on a tilt, about a 20 to 30 degree tilt, so you can see if everything shakes out. If you turn to the helmsman and you say, hard a port, that is, throw the wheel over 360 degrees to go to the left, what's the aircraft carrier going to do initially?
Don't know.
Nothing.
No.
Inertia.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, we're talking about speedboat or aircraft carrier here is what we're talking about.
Aircraft carriers, you just basically, they have so much mass, it takes time. That's the same thing you have in the auto industry, where you have so much inertia from investments that have been made that you're asking these companies to change what is essentially an aircraft carrier. And so the first thing is, It takes anywhere up to 1 to 2 years to get a supplier, so that's a problem. And it takes time to build a plant, anywhere up to 5 years. So you're asking the auto industry to reorientate themselves overnight, and that's not going to be easy. The second thing that you're going to find is that a lot of the suppliers you have involved are small to medium-sized suppliers. They're people with over 500 and fewer employees. If you get to the second, third, and fourth tiers, the lower tiers of the supply chain, there they are. Mm-hmm. Why is a tariff so important to them? Well, here's what's going to happen. The supply chain is going to have difficulty responding. If the tariff is less than 2 months, companies like Ford, GM, Stellantis, Honda, et cetera, will absorb it. If it's more than 2 months, they're going to have to pass it on to the customer. That means you're going to see the price of cars go up anywhere, and I've heard some numbers, and they're just all over the map, anywhere from a couple of thousand up to 10,000. So if you think of it that way, you're going to be paying, with a normal car, which is around, with car prices rising anywhere from 4 to 10,000, and a new car costing on average about 48,000, and a truck costing around 60,000, you're looking at prices going up to around, at the low end, 52,000 on a new car, and 64 on a truck, up to 70,000 on a truck. As prices go up, demand goes down, and this is occurring at the worst time, because the auto industry has just recovered from the pandemic. It's recovered from the chip shortage, it's got a high interest rate, and it's trying to get consumers back to buying cars. So you've hit it with this kind of whammy. And then what else is happening? Well, on top of that, demand's going to go down. And if demand goes down, what's that going to do? Well, production's going to go down. Production goes down. That means that a lot of the small to medium-sized suppliers who are financially weak are going to go out of business. So that is something suppliers are concerned about, because these suppliers, you need to replace them. So now you've got a situation where the auto industry has got some real concern. In fact, to give you an idea how concerned there was an unsigned letter from Tesla to the Trump administration saying, don't put the tariffs in effect. And of all of the car companies, Rivian and Tesla, with 70% of their parts being sourced in the United States, are the least immune. So this gives you an idea. So you put that in place, which means unemployment's going to go up, GDP's going to go up, and we're starting to see economists kind of downgrade the GDP. And then suddenly that triggers something else which I would be concerned about. Here's something to think about. When you lend money to someone, how often are you, when you borrow money or you see people who borrow money, one of the things they ask you is, how much debt do you have? And they compare your debt to your revenue stream, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so typically, do you want to lend money to someone who has more debt than revenue?
I would not do it, no.
Okay, here's a question. Currently, what's the ratio of the United States debt to the GDP?
Tell me. Go ahead, tell me.
Okay, 121.85%. We have more in debt than we have GDP. And so the reason I'm bringing that up is because your debt is constant. Your GDP is an indication of economic growth. That's going to fall.
Professor, let me take a break. We're going to pick it up here. We're going back. I want to get you and I are at the 4,000 level here, and I'm getting some questions in from the 1,000 level, and I want to get to those, too, so everybody understands. Somebody says, why is it okay for other countries to place tariffs on America's goods, but it's not okay for America to reciprocate? Somebody else said that the United States is the most powerful country in the world. Everybody needs America, so they will have to bend at the knee and submit to President Trump's tariffs. You can address those two questions when we come back. 9:40, 20 till 10. Tommy Tucker trying to lead the politics out of it and just talking about tariffs here on WWL. All right, Tommy Tucker, 9:45, back with Professor Stephen Melnick talking about tariffs. Let me go to the text line, get a couple of these questions. First of all, Professor, United States, most powerful country in the world. Other countries will have to bend at the knee and respect President Trump's tariffs. Thoughts?
My response to that is that's changing. Yes, the United States is the world's most powerful country, but if you take a look at what's happening in the world, countries are now reorientating trade patterns, and they're also reorientating their security patterns. I'll give you an example. Canada's in the process of upgrading its military. Now, one of the best effects Trump has had is he has highlighted the fact that NATO, most of the countries in NATO, have not borne their fair share. In the NATO charter, there are some requirements. And right now what's happening as a result of Trump, and Trump's got to be, this is something he has been responsible for. He has gotten countries like Canada and the EU, the members of the nations of the European Union, to increase their spending on defense. What's happening, though, is if you're a powerful country and you're seen as a worthwhile partner, I take you seriously. If you're a powerful country and you're acting erratically, I begin to protect myself. It's just risk management. And think about what's happening in the world. Canada right now is in the process of upgrading its military capabilities. As a Canadian-American citizen, when I lived in Canada and I was born in Canada, I was an officer in the Canadian Army, which is the only way. I have a commission from the Queen, which is the only way I could be a gentleman. What happened is we needed it. Initially, Canadians were going to buy F-35 fighters. They've committed to the initial batch of 18. They're now renegotiating. They're reconsidering the remaining of order, which is fairly large. And they're considering buying instead either the French Rafale fighter, which is considered a really good substitute to the F-35, or they're considering the Gripen from Sweden. The United States was supposed to supply submarines to the Canadian Navy. That's just been changed, and we're now buying, the Canadians are now buying their subs from France. You see the fact that the Europeans are basically buying and they're looking internally to what they can supply to themselves. So, yes, the United States is a powerful country, but, you know, when you're faced by a powerful country who is taking actions which are uncertain, you have to protect yourself, and countries are doing that. And so, yes, countries in the short term are going to act in a certain way, but in the long term, you're seeing it happen right now. You're seeing the European Union talking amongst themselves and saying, we may not be able to depend upon the United States for protection. You see Canada saying, we're going to have to consider ourselves working with Europe. Canada has even reached out to China. And you've now got places like South Korea, which are being considered as alternative spy weapons.
Let me get to this real quick, Professor, if I can, before we run out of time. And that is, somebody texted in and said, the idea, y'all are missing the point. The idea is to bring manufacturing back to the United States. Nobody's missing anything. We've discussed this a whole bunch. But talk about the when it comes to what it costs to build things in the United States, to manufacture things in the United States, as opposed to labor in other parts of the world, and bringing manufacturing back, and ultimately whether it's due to tariffs. I'm going to finish one more long question here, Professor, and I'll turn it over to you. Tariffs originally were to produce revenue for the Treasury, not to balance trade or to create manufacturing. That's what the president's trying to do now. So when it comes to the bringing manufacturing back, what are the challenges involved there?
Oh, major challenges in bringing manufacturing back. And the reason I know that is because the fact I'm working on another project about trying to create a trusted supply chain in microelectronic chips. And here's one of the major challenges. You, number one, have to have, it takes time to build capacity. Number two, we have to have a workforce. In working at the project on bringing, basically having a trusted supply chain for chips, which are needed in the military. One of the major weaknesses and one of the things we found in talking with numerous companies is their major concern is a supply force, a capable, growing workforce that is able to work with their system. If in today's environment, we're no longer bringing back jobs which are simply assembly line, there's a higher level of intelligence required, a higher level of training, which means there's not simply the challenge of reshoring factories to the United States. There's also the fact that we've got to get the workforce, and that's an issue. And on top of that, what we found with the prior attempts by Trump, which was to, you know, prevent steel from going overseas, yes, we did preserve certain jobs. The result of which is that, yes, you have manufacturing coming back to a certain extent. However, what they found out, what the economists found out, is that everyone wound up paying $675 more to have those jobs. So you got them, but you paid higher prices. So the question is up to the listener. Yes, we want to bring back jobs. Yes, we want to ensure that we have a workforce that is being well paid, but are you willing to pay the price? And the second issue is, and this is an issue no one's really discussing, we're changing. And as we're changing, there's a question of how do we retool our workforce? Other countries have programs in place. We don't. We rely on the marketplace, and at times that's not the best. And I'll give you one more thing to think about. The tariff, which is focused a lot on the auto industry, which has been one of our major drivers of the economy, to give you an idea, if you look at the auto industry basically accounts for 3 to 5% of the GDP, counts for over $1 trillion in the GDP, creates 9.6 million jobs across the United States. And for every dollar that you invest in the vehicle manufacturing, you create another $3.45 in economic value. And that comes from the government. That comes from the economic analysts. One of the challenges we have is our economy is transitioning, and it's very present in the auto industry. What you're doing is if I'm Ford, if I'm Stellantis, if I'm GM, I'm worried about the next generation of cars. And do I invest in creating manufacturing jobs for internal combustion engines, or do I invest in creating manufacturing jobs for the next generation of vehicles, which may be hydrogen or they may be electric? In which case, the money I spend in responding to the short-term issue is money I wouldn't be able to use to retool the auto industry. And here's something for you to think about. I was talking on Wednesday with someone who works in lithium-ion technology batteries. He described what happened. A group of American executives from Ford and GM went across to China just recently, and they thought the Chinese were 5 years ahead. They came back and they said they're 10 years ahead of us.
Wow. Professor, never enough time. We'll pick it up there when we talk to you next time. Professor Stephen Melnick, professor of supply chain management at Michigan State. Sometimes the reality, the economics, don't always go along with political views. You can agree, you can disagree. We're just trying to give you the information you need. We'll talk to Newell when we come back, see what he's got today on WWL.